everyone.
Should have all gentlemen. Samuel, about this very interesting topic, culture characteristics, imagine.
Okay, thanks Juan. So today I'll be talking about our recent progress on culture characteristic matching. My talk won't take full hour, so please stop me anytime you get confused and raise any discussions. My discussions are based mainly on our recent paper on archive. Culture characteristic matching, or CCM in short, is a method in numerical relativity to solve Einstein's equations. So below, I will first introduce the general idea of this method. Then I will explain how we implement this method in our numerical relativity called a spectre. And after that, I will go through our results from those CCM simulations. And finally, I will briefly go through our current status and our future plans. All right, so a major task of numerical relativity is to simulate the dynamics of binary black hole mergers. You know, as two black holes orbit around each other, the system emits gravitational waves toward our detectors, such as LIGO, which locate at future null infinity. To simulate this system, we can split the whole system into two zones, including near zone, where the gravity is strong, and the wave zone, which is far away from the system. Due to the nature of those two zones, people designed different formulations to simulate the dynamics therein. For the moment, there are three major formulations in numerical relativity, including Cauchy evolution, which is more suitable for near zone simulation. Characteristic evolution focuses mainly on the wave zone. And the third one is called hyperboloidal slicing, which is beyond the topic of this talk. Below, I will be focusing on the first two, Cauchy and the characteristic evolutions. First, for the Cauchy evolution, as the name implies, this method converts Einstein's equations into a Cauchy problem. A standard way is to decompose the spacetime into three-dimensional spatial slices plus one temporal direction. And normally, we can put binary black holes in an orbit on the first time slice and evolve the system forward in time, something like this. Sure. We cannot simulate infinite large space. So we have to truncate our space at a finite radius and impose boundary conditions at the outer boundary. However, this is a bad news because the most interesting thing we care about is the gravitational waves measured by our detectors, which locate at future null infinity. And this region lies outside the whole Cauchy domain. So we have to design tools to extract gravitational waves from the Cauchy simulation. The most straightforward way is to do extrapolation. You know, as the system evolves, the system emits gravitational waves, and the outgoing gravitational waves travel along this outgoing light cone. And we can measure the gravitational waves for each time step, and then extrapolate the waveforms to infinity. However, during this process, we cannot guarantee that the Einstein's equations are satisfied. So we have to consider a different formulation to handle the wave zone, which is outside the Cauchy domain.
Sorry?
Yes.
Why did you say that you couldn't guarantee that Einstein's equations are satisfied? There is nothing that stops you from that. I mean, whether it's going to be physically consistent with what you want, that's a different story.
Because the way we do the extrapolation is that just a naive extrapolation. You know, we assume size zero follows one over.
But yes. In the domain.
In the domain, it follows, it follows Einstein's prediction, right? But outside, it doesn't.
Is there
Is that a problem? Can you compactify?
Yes, and
so you bring it into a finite distance.
So one way is to do hypervisor slicing. So that's a different story. But other way is to use the characteristic evolution. In this formulation, you can do the compactified coordinate system. So you can, and this is thing that I'm going to mention.
Can I add to that? So you could compactify in space, and that's what Franz Pretorius, for instance, I'm not sure if Will also does.
Yeah.
But if you compactify the space like hypersurface, right, the wavelength that is a long wavelength becomes an arbitrarily short wavelength, right?
Sure.
The last point, the next point is arbitrarily high frequency, and that you're done then doing anyways. So then, in effect, what happens is you dissipate the hell out of it.
Okay.
And so that's compactification if you want, but in reality, it's just throwing away everything that is far enough one way or another. That's what you're doing.
Okay.
But if you're doing what he's able to explain, that's different.
Yep. So that's that gives a perfect introduction to the characteristic evolution. To deal with the outside, you know, the wave zone, we can use this formulation where we slice the spacetime in terms of null hypersurfaces, as opposed to, you know, space-like hypersurfaces used by the Cauchy evolution. And the characteristic evolution has two major advantages over the Cauchy evolution. First, as you just asked, the future null infinity is encompassed in its computational domain through a compactified coordinate system. So we can compute gravitational waves measured by inertial observers at future null infinity unambiguously. And the second, in practical sense, for a binary black hole system, it takes only minutes to hours to run a system. So it is extremely computationally cheap. In contrast, you know, a Cauchy evolution may take weeks to months. So we would like to use the characteristic formulation to cover as much space as possible. However, a downside of this characteristic evolution is that it cannot handle strong gravity region. You know, nullaries can swirl around black holes and may lead to caustics. One example is the gravitational lensing. So the coordinates constructed on those nullaries are problematic near black holes, may break down the whole characteristic evolution.
Sorry, is characteristic evolution linear or is it something different? Are you solving the linear?
No, it's the full Einstein's equations. You rewrite Einstein's equation in here. Yeah.
So then what is characteristic evolution, I guess, right? If you then, I don't know.
So characteristic evolution is to rewrite Einstein's equations in terms of bounded sex coordinates. It's a special gauge associated with inertial observer at infinity. And in that coordinate, you slice the spacetime in terms of null slices.
So these cross each other, basically, when you...
Yes.
Okay, very good.
So here, you may notice that two formulations are pretty complementary, right? They have quite different features. So in principle, if we can combine them together, then we can take advantage of both methods. And indeed, we can do that. And this method is called Cauchy characteristic extraction, or CCE. So basically, we can use Cauchy evolution to handle strong gravity region, and a characteristic system to handle the wave zone. And in practice, we can first finish the inner Cauchy evolution. And this allows to construct metric data on a tongue-like word tube. Then we can take the word tube data as boundary conditions to evolve the outer characteristic system in this way. So you can see the whole Cauchy characteristic evolution covers both near zone and the wave zone. And you may also notice that within this method, the data flow is one way. We just need to send data from the Cauchy side to characteristic side. So based on my descriptions, you may feel that CCE is a perfect tool to simulate binary black hole systems, because you know, it takes advantage of both Cauchy and the characteristic systems, and it can measure gravitational waves at infinity unambiguously. However, this is not the case. So recall that in order to do CCE, we have to first finish the inner Cauchy evolution. And to do this, we have to truncate our space at a finite radius and impose some boundary conditions at an artificial numerical boundary. And normally, we make some assumptions within this process. For example, we assume there is no incoming gravitational wave fluxes entering the inner Cauchy domain. However, this is not true, because let's imagine a binary black hole system, and this system emits gravitational waves outward. And part of the wave that has already passed through the outer boundary can be reflected by the local curvature in the wave zone and re-enter the Cauchy domain again. So there is no way to fully avoid these backscattered gravitational waves. But in principle, we can put this outer boundary far enough to weaken this approximation, to weaken this effect. But this increases computational cost. And also, there is always systematic error associated with this assumption. So a natural question is, you know, how do we get rid of this assumption? To do this, we have to model this backscattered wave. This is a hard problem, but it turns out that the outer characteristic system is capable of handling this task.
So what exactly is responsible for this backscattering?
Because, you know, GR is nonlinear. So, you know, graviton can couple to each and to itself. So basically, if let's assume there is some background over here. It's not flat. And there is some potential. So you can, this gravitational wave can be reflected, just like Schrodinger's equation.
It's backscattering of the curvature.
So I couldn't get why that happens outside of your numerical domain and it can enter.
In practice, it happens. I mean, in nature, it happens. But we don't have computational grid to cover this part if we use only Cauchy grid, right?
Yeah, so my point is that how that is outside the domain, how can that affect whatever is happening inside your numerical domain?
Because it will get reflected and re-enter the domain.
Yeah, so can I say the difference of the, as he said correctly, forget about the outside region. You need to have a control of the inside region. In order to be able to do the inside region, you need boundary conditions. Whatever you specify, we have physics that is missing because of the backscattering. If you knew exactly what you put on that boundary correctly, you wouldn't be doing the problem in the first place because you would have already solved the problem. So whatever you put on that light, whatever circle boundary, it's going to be incorrect. And at the very least, it's going to be missing that backscattering. So that's all I'm saying.
Yes.
So are you gonna, to respond to Jeff, can you maybe say why is it you can compactify along null surfaces and that is different from along a space like upper surface?
So because in a characteristic formulation, you basically travel along the light. So you don't have the issue of, you know, this compression stuff. You can just define a coordinate that is, you know, like 1 over r to compactify the infinity. Is that the question? Or,
yeah. So to augment a little bit, on that ongoing null surface, on each ongoing null surface, you're evolving a constant. It's a constant function.
For sure. Yeah.
And so then, yeah, you can compactify as much as you want. You don't lose resolution.
Yeah, basically, you travel with waveforms. You travel with the light or gravitational wave.
Yeah. So why is the characteristic evolution so much cheaper?
That's a good question. So because so here we care about only gravitational waves in some sense. So we can Okay, maybe the correct answer is that there is not too much strong gravity feature. For example, let's imagine an Emery system. You have to put more grid around a small black hole, something like that. But for the characteristic system, it's just a vacuum. And what we care about is just the propagation of gravitational waves. So in that region, it's quite boring, right? We just care about the propagation of gravitational waves. And that's the major limitation of this method, because we cannot use that to cover, you know, black hole.
Sure. But it's still like, it's still 3D. And
yes, 3D.
And you're still evolving, you know,
right.
Six components.
Yeah, and it's still CFL limited. But as he was saying, it's essentially you're dealing with a constant. So you can get away with a lot less resolution.
Okay.
And also the structure of the equations are simpler. You have radial iterations on null surfaces, and then only two evolution equations. So the equations themselves turn out to be simpler.
Okay. But that shouldn't get you from months to hours, though. That's like a factor of two or something, you know, probably.
I mean, of course, the key thing is that you can get away with a lot less resolution.
That would be the, yeah, okay.
Yeah, right. So that's a good question. So here we don't need so much high resolution to run characteristic systems, because there are not too many features in this domain.
And so what you're saying, if I understand correctly, is that this is one way, so it only simulates outgoing null rays, and so you're
yes.
not simulating this reflection that you're saying.
That is for CCE, and this reflection stuff is the topic of CCM.
Right. So you're saying that in this, the reason this doesn't work is because characteristic evolution is only one way.
You mean in terms of characteristic evolution itself? No, it's both way. It is the full solution of Einstein's equation. So you can have both components.
Right, but if you don't specify that there are any ingoing null rays, then you're only simulating the outgoing ones coming from the simulation in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're getting backscattering.
Right. But then, yeah, right. That's like the next slide.
Just yep.
Trying to understand what's going on up until this point.
Oh, up to this point, you're getting backscattering, but at the abstraction surface, you drop into information.
All right, so I have mentioned this issue of backscatter, which is an assumption made in our current Cauchy evolution. And I also mentioned that the characteristic system is able to handle this problem. So what we need to do is to match Cauchy and the characteristic system together. And this method is called Cauchy characteristic matching, or CCM. So in practice, we first put Cauchy data on a spatial slice, including data at the outer boundary. Then which travels outward, and then this piece of data is enough for us to evolve the characteristic system outside on the same null slice. And after this null slice is done, we can compute the size of the backscattered wave, which goes inside. And we can send this piece of information back to the Cauchy grid. And we insert those data into the boundary condition of the Cauchy evolution to evolve the Cauchy data to the next slice. Then we just repeat the whole steps again and again. So for the moment, a full CCM algorithm is still missing. So in our work, we made some progress along this direction and implemented a CCM algorithm in our numerical relativity called Spectre. And below, I will explain how we do that.
So one question,
yep.
when you call backscatter wave,
yep.
I mean, we don't know what a backscattered wave is.
We know, and I will explain that. How do we define those waves?
Right, but I mean, it's not necessarily gravitational waves. I mean, at a finite location, We cannot say what gravitational wave is.
I mean, but this is the thing that, I will go through. But I mean,
okay.
After you choose the inner Cauchy formulation, you can write down in an explicit way what the backscatter ray should look like. And I will go into the details later.
Whether it's a gravitational wave or not, I mean, that you're operationally, you're going to call it a wave, but we don't know. The same thing as I don't know what the mass of this object is in general relativity, right?
Yes. Maybe let's leave this part later. And let me first explain how we do the Cauchy part.
Sorry, before you...
Yep.
So in your previous slide for the initial null surface,
uh-huh.
I missed whether you were saying that's somehow determined or by the initial t equals zero surface.
Yes, for the
Just like setting data there.
Yeah, that's a good question. So for the first time slice, you have to specify some inertial data here, which is fully free. There is no constraint equations to solve for.
Right.
And then that is actually a problem, because if you impose some wrong inertial data, that will lead to junk radiation. And this is the thing that we haven't worked out. But so far, our inertial data is fine with some of our current simulations. But maybe in the future, our initial data is not enough. That will lead to junk radiation.
Okay.
But I mean, after the first, so the physical intuition here is that we can impose any amount of waves that come from the past infinity, because this information is fully free. But in order to simulate a BBH system, we have to choose the initial data in such a way that it mimics a system that starts from, you know, past infinity, something like that. But yeah, right now there is no way to solve for this piece of information. All right, so Spectre is an open source code developed by SXS Collaboration. Its CCE module uses Spectral method, which is one reason that it is pretty fast. We can run its CCE module on its own, as long as we provide a virtual data from any code. Or we can combine that with other Spectre modules, such as Cauchy evolution. And then this infrastructure facilitates us to implement CCM in Spectre. The detailed matching algorithm, which is related to what Luis just asked, depends on how we do the Cauchy evolution. In Spectre, we use first order generalized harmonic. Here, generalized harmonic means that we allow the coordinates to evolve in a certain way. Basically, we here specify the gauge choice H, And here we treat the time and the spatial derivatives of metric as dynamical variables, so we can convert Einstein's equations into first order PDEs. And here this characteristic matrix AK alpha beta determines the nature of the PDEs. Especially at the outer boundary, we can project this matrix to R hat, which is the unit normal vector of the outer boundary. Then we end up with an n by n matrix whose eigenvectors are called characteristic fields, and the eigenvalues are the corresponding characteristic speeds. Here we need to impose boundary conditions on the characteristic fields that enter the domain. And it turns out that the incoming characteristic field we care about has 10 degrees of freedom. And you can define explicit projection operators to project them into three subsets. And the details can be found in this paper. The first subsize corresponds to a constraint-preserving subset, which has four degrees of freedom. You know, constraint. Einstein's equations are a constraint system, and its constraint violation variables have their own dynamics. So at outer boundary, we have to avoid their fluxes entering the Cauchy domain. So here we don't have too much freedom to pick this subset of boundary conditions. And so this part has nothing to do with CCI. The second subset corresponds to the physical subset. And it has 2 degrees of freedom. Again, within this formulation, there is a way to write down the explicit projection operator to project to this subset. And we end up with two degrees of freedom. And they correspond to 2 polarization states of backscattered gravitational waves. And this is the main focus of our current work. And the rest 4 degrees of freedom is purely gauge. And for the moment, I don't know whether we can use CCM to handle this part, so we leave that for future work.
I mean, can I ask a question?
Yes.
I have a hard time understanding how is it that you can split the first from the second one. So let me give you an example. Suppose I have a gauge.
Yes.
Where my boundary now turns into being incoming now.
Yes.
That could be.
Uh-huh.
If that's the case, then I don't have any more of those 4 degrees of freedom of constraint preserved are gone because they're not there anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't understand how is that you can distinguish first and last point as being independent. Let me just make an example even worse.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it space like incoming.
Uh-huh.
And so then I have nothing. I mean, my nothing from this characteristic side
uh-huh.
is to be needed on the characteristic side. So that this clean diet division, I think that it comes with many assumptions.
Sorry, I don't follow your point about the income.
Take this boundary.
Yes.
Right. So you're saying within the causal domain of dependence of this boundary, I can evolve everything. So I'm going to say if my gauge could be that such that this boundary happens to be space-like. So then with just my initial data, I can evolve the full future, and I couldn't care less about what's going on the characteristic side.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you tell me, okay, you have already partially fixed the gauge or assumed something very strong in the gauge so that the boundary behaves in a way that it would be continues to be time-like forever, for example, some other criteria.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot disentangle the constraint preserving from the gauge part as being independent. So just what I'm reacting to is this statement has nothing to do with CCM.
But you can write down the dynamics of the constraint variables, right? Because you can define what those constraint variables look like and write down their equations. And they have their own characteristic matrix and their own incoming flux. And that subset corresponds to the incoming characteristic flux at the outer boundary. And in this way, you can define a projection operator
sure.
associated with the first case with this formulation. And you can just take the identity operation minus the first one and
okay.
minus the second one.
How the projectors will work.
Yeah, yes.
I don't think, okay, we can go offline.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, do you ensure that the outer boundary has like a space-like normal?
Yes.
You can't, oh really? Yeah. So what if everything falls into a black hole? I mean,
then you have the simulation, really, the boundary is going to be timeline. I mean, what other structure would it have?
Again, I mean, so one thing is to make some assumptions of what might happen, and the other thing what could happen in general. So there are some assumptions that are being assumed that well, that's redundant, but some strong assumptions that are being taken, and fine.
Okay, yeah, probably I may disagree with you, but we can chat offline, because from my point of view, I don't think there is any assumption, but yeah.
But assuming this is how it breaks down, is there any particular way that it's
like clear to divvy up where these freedoms go, like which of the 10 degrees of freedom you actually assign to constraint preserving conditions? Does it matter?
With this, you know, first order generalized harmonic, there is a specific way to assign, you know, a subset to this constraint preserving part.
Okay. But so it is obvious which degrees of freedom go with which.
Yes. Yeah, maybe Luis, we can sit down and go through that paper.
Saying not to everyone else, but it's okay.
All right,
do assume that the shift at the outer boundary is positive or something?
I'm sorry?
That the shift vector is positive?
You have
50 variables, so you have 50 characteristics.
Yes.
And
so
you specify 10, so I assume
no.
10 so, outgoing and 30 propagate inside the boundary, or how?
Sorry, I was actually cheating here, and so there are more characteristic fields, but all of them, the rest of them are all the constraint preserving part. So basically, it's the G mu nu side, the G mu dt. Of G mu nu, that part has 10 degrees of freedom, and two of them are the physical part.
Yeah, it's here talking about the 10 degrees of freedom of the metric. The rest,
yes,
the first order formulation.
Yes, and they can be wrapped into the constraint preserving part.
In terms of characteristics, I would expect 4 polarization states, right? Ingoing and outgoing modes.
Right. I'm here talking about the incoming characteristic field.
Yes.
For the incoming one,
yeah,
we have
10 incoming ones.
Yep.
But overall, you should have 50 or something modes. So are the others all outgoing, or what do you assume there?
The other ones are is claiming they're all going to be constrained.
Yes, the others should be constraint preserving part.
They're related to just definitions.
You're evolving 50 variables, right? The 4 metric and all the derivatives of the 4 metric.
Yes.
And something is propagating outwards.
Yes.
So why don't you call them outgoing characteristic fields?
Because that part, we shouldn't impose boundary condition. We can call it. Yeah.
I understand.
Yes.
But so how many outgoing do you have?
Oh, how many
propagate in the boundary, or how do you set that up?
I don't have a number off the top of my hand because what we care about is only the ingoing one. The outgoing, we shouldn't impose any boundary conditions on the outgoing.
Yes,
right?
Yes. So you assume all the others are outgoing. That is a
No. This we are not assuming. We can compute their characteristic speed.
The characteristic speeds of the other ones, are they zero or positive?
Some of them are zero and some of them are positive. It depends on the shift, of course.
Okay, so you're making assumption about the shift to ensure that you only 10 of them are ingoing.
Okay, that's a good question. Yeah, we have to go back. Maybe this is potentially problematic, but I have to check details.
Okay, right, good.
I mean, for all the ones, that there's going to be some going ingoing, some going outgoing, and some that are tangential to the boundary, right?
Yes.
The tangential to the boundary is the one that is called constraint preserving, in some sense.
Well.
To some.
Yeah, okay. All right, so in our paper, we worked out a generic method to match the physical subset without any approximation. So because, as I mentioned, we can define a specific explicit projection operator to project the boundary condition into this subset. So we can write down what the backscatter gravitational waves should look like. So there is well-defined. And there is no ambiguity. The core step is to do Lorentz transformations from whatever is available on the characteristic side to go to the Cauchy side. And in fact, this part of calculations is relevant to the computational of gravitational wave echoes, because I was thinking about how to compute echoes with gravitational with numerical relativity, and it turns out that there are some mathematical foundations that is related to this piece of calculation. So this part of calculation was inspired by the other project, but here I won't go into details. This part is quite technical. Alright, so after the explaining the logic, here I'm gonna show some results obtained from our simulations. Yes.
You mentioned how things match in the radial direction. What in the angular direction? Are you assume kind of a no-slip connection between them? Or is the characteristic region allowed to kind of move and then you interpolate?
We do the interpolation. We have two set of angular coordinates. One is the Cauchy coordinates, and the other one is the characteristic angular coordinates, and they move with respect to each other. So we do an interpolation.
But I guess they don't move, or they move together in the radial direction. They're just touching all the time.
Yes, they are touching all the time. This is related to how we implement this characteristic system. We can guarantee that they are always on the same radial slice, but not the angular coordinates.
Okay. Interesting. Thank you.
All right. So the first test we did is to place a pulse on the characteristic grid, and since this is an outgoing north slice, any signal imposed on this slice is intrinsically ingoing. So as time evolves, we expect this signal will pass through the boundary between the Cauchy and the characteristic system and enter the Cauchy grid. And indeed, on the right, this is the cross section of this is the cross section of the Cauchy grid. You can see there is something entering the Cauchy grid, and you may notice the quadrupolar structure, which is consistent with the 2-2 harmonic we imposed here, and we could be more quantitative. We can first measure gravitational waves on this world tube in the top panel. So here we use the first trough labeled by this vertical black line to indicate the time that this signal hits the world tube, and this is the rough estimation for the time this signal starts to enter the Cauchy grid. And afterward, this signal falls to the center of the Cauchy grid, bounces back, and escapes to infinity again. And the time interval should be the crossing time of the Cauchy grid, which is the diameter. So we use T2 to label this crossing time after T1. And indeed, you can see there is a signal appears at infinity near T2. So this test demonstrates that we can indeed, this matching algorithm can indeed send the gravitational wave from the characteristic side to the Cauchy side. Yes.
You have CC, what my scene
of CC? Oh, right, okay, yes. Sorry for the reminder, I forgot this part. So by contrast, for CCE part, for the CCE simulation, the characteristic grid doesn't talk to Cauchy grid. So the characteristic simulation has a perfect reflective boundary at this world tube. So as long as this ingoing wave hits the world tube, it gets reflected immediately. So you can see there is a huge reflective wave near T1, and there is nothing afterwards. And by comparison, in the CCM simulation, there is very little reflective wave. Right.
But that's an artificial comparison. But whatever you would do would be artificial. And if you're choosing the field, the characteristic to bounce off the world, you could have chosen for it to go through, not ever talk with CCM. But in which case, you wouldn't have that signal. You would have something else. But
Right. So
we'll also be missing the second part.
Yes, I agree. So that brings to our second test. We have to, but before that, let me talk about, you know, the constraint evaluations. So we run the system with three numerical resolutions, and you see the constraint evaluations converge with resolution as expected, and there is no numerical instability. So this test only demonstrates the communication of CCM, but in order to be more accurate, we have to design a second test where we place a Tolkowski wave on the Cauchy slice and let the system evolve outward, travel outward. And here we pick a pretty small Cauchy radius, and we evolve the system with both CCM and CCE.
Are you doing this on a curve background? Or?
No, it's just a flat space time background.
Flat space, okay.
Yes. So then we would see the difference, but we don't know which one is more accurate. So we have to design the third reference system to compare with. In this case, we could choose other CCE system with outer boundary far enough, which remains causally disconnected with the whole system throughout the whole simulation. And in this way, we can guarantee that the boundary conditions won't contaminate the whole simulations. And on the right, I plot the strains obtained from those three simulations. You can see this red one, which comes from the CCM simulation, lies on the top of this reference one, which is in blue. However, there is a pretty large difference in the CCE simulation, which is this black curve. And in the bottom panel, I show the difference between across different wavelengths. So the difference between CCE and the reference one, which is in this red curve, is roughly one order of magnitude smaller than the CCE simulation. So indeed, you can see with this matching algorithm, we can improve the accuracy of the waveform comparing to this reference simulation.
So what do you think is sourcing this? So the Austin pulse is going out?
Yes, I think there's some backscatter wave. Yes.
That you're making artificially bounce on the wall tube in CCE while it's clinging on the CCM.
Yes.
But you say it's a flat background. Why are the
backs? So here you have to increase the amplitude of this Tolkowski large enough to see the backscattering effect, so that the system is nonlinear. In the linear region, you wouldn't see the difference between CCM and CCM. We have to. We can only see the difference in the nonlinear region.
Something
like self-interaction. The TR is non-abelian. So
what's the mass of that pulse compared to its characteristic scale?
I'm sorry.
Just out of curiosity, how nonlinear is it? Like, what's the mass of that pulse compared to its wavelength?
Sorry, I don't have any number of the top one. But the amplitude is 2, but I don't think it's meaningful. But I can check that. All right, and we can also compute the violations of Bianchi identities in terms of well scalars. They qualify the quantity of the quality of the waveforms. So here you can see the CCM simulation. So this is the Bianchi identity associated with size 0. And you can see after taking the CCM into account, it outperforms the other two. And it is better than the CCE simulation by one order of magnitude, meaning that CCM leads to higher accurate, more accurate waveforms.
Sorry, what is that? So it's a violation, Bianchi identity related to size 0, is like the size 0 dot equals
yes.
or something.
Yes.
And so are you evaluating of the whole grid, or yeah, what is that? So is it, or is it a fixed?
At square.
At square?
Yes, at square. All right, and we also run the system with three numerical resolutions.
Sorry, why does your reference violate Bianchi identity so badly? Is it supposed to be good?
I guess, you know, because this auto-boundary is 900 versus, you know, 41.
It's just regen.
Yes.
Okay, that makes
sense. Now, why does it violate Bianchi so early?
You mean here? Because there is the Tarkovsky wave hits the boundary at this time. So you see three of them has a huge peak here. This is the time when the Tarkovsky wave hits the world tube.
But is there a world tube with the reference one? For the reference one, it also hits it?
Yes. For the reference one, I also put the world tube at the same place to make a fair comparison. It's just, you know, I increase the size of the Cauchy domain so that the outer boundary conditions won't contaminate the rest of the simulations.
Right, but then why does the reference and CC do differently if you're the scribe? So I think this same thing that Yash was asking, I'm confused.
One thing I think comes from the outside, because maybe we have low resolution here, so there is some junk. Or noise.
But then are you not trying to have it both ways? When it's convenient or not convenient, you blame things on the outside. On the other, in our case, you told me the reference is something you're going to compare and look how good things are.
Okay. That's a good comment. I don't know how to answer this question.
So you changed your reference simulations. So in this slide, your reference simulation has a boundary at 900, and
yep.
The other one you place the boundary back to 41.
Yes. All right. So there are constraint violations converge with simulation converge with resolutions, and we don't find any instability.
Do they converge away with resolution?
With resolution? We have to check. We have to check with. Sorry, I don't have results of that, but it should be very easy to run.
So just to make it clear, so what you guys call CC is not what it originally was called CC, maybe because of practical reasons, but the original CC had the boundary of Cauchy a little bit beyond where the boundary to communicate with the characteristic was. You put them, what you call CC is them being at exactly the same place.
We can put, so in the CC case, we can put the world view wherever we want. It's just here we want to make a fair comparison with CCM.
So you're saying you put, okay.
So we just, you know, put the world view at the same place as the outer boundary. And that's the only reason. And we also did other, you know, nonlinear perturbation of curve black hole. No numerical instability was found.
How hard did you try to make it unstable? Did you put a bit of noise on the grid?
So far, my experience is that as long as Cauchy evolution is stable, then CCM is stable. I don't find any case where, you know, CCM itself is unstable.
Could have an instability that grows slowly. So if you put
low-level
noise on the grid, then you would pick up on any instability much more reliable than just trying to set up perfect initial conditions.
So sorry, but there should be no instability. So on the Cauchy side, you're doing kind of the honest to God. If I ignore the existence of constraint, you're saying anything that is incoming from the outside, I'm allowed to put in. And then the rest is fine. So that, from the mathematical PDE, is fine. You shouldn't have an instability. What you might have is an inconsistency with respect to solving Einstein's equation, because Einstein's equation is constrained. This is like me saying, I'm going to evolve electrodynamics, and I'm going to forget that the divergence of B is equal to zero. I'm going to put whatever boundary condition. Maybe what I'm doing is I'm introducing some non-trivial monopole, but I would have no instability.
But CCM is not well posed, right? Maybe that will cause some issue.
No, and the way you're doing it is you're, again, this is the thing that we need to discuss very clearly,
yeah.
But you're saying I'm only communicating things that are incoming into the domain. I'm only considering things that are outgoing from the domain. So I think it's instability is fine. There shouldn't be an instability. But the risk is that it might not be consistent with Einstein's equations because of some constraint violation. But the constraint violation doesn't mean that the mathematical theory will give you an imposed problem.
Okay.
So maybe also the magic, then the potential constraint violation is being kind of squashed by constraint dumping or something.
Okay. But how do you then deal with, you know, the well-posed or ill-posedness of CCM? What does that mean?
I don't think, I mean, from the point of view of the potentially modes that are unstable, I don't think you have them. If I take, just let's think about just the Cauchy part, right? The Cauchy part, if I give data that sets to whatever zero, let's say the incoming modes, that's just perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
You might introduce within the causal domain of dependence constraint violating modes, but they will still be stable, the solution. And then I do the same thing on the other side, the characteristic, same issue. So it might be that the fear of merit is not so much a lack of instability, but perhaps monitoring violations of the residual of Einstein's equations.
Yes.
And that will perhaps see that's an issue. I don't know.
Yeah, we do have you know, violation. We did compare CCE versus CCM, and there is no difference at all, at least for our current tests. No exception.
No difference at all?
Right, no difference at all. I mean, as long as you're given the same Cauchy resolution, they just less on the each on the top of each other.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, but you see the Bianchi identities, violations of Bianchi identities are quite different, and the waveforms are quite different. And this CCM is more consistent with this reference one.
Sijang, couldn't there also be some instabilities regarding the boundary? So your boundary between CCM and CCE that could start crumpling up or have some instabilities there?
Sorry, can you repeat your question?
So your boundary is allowed to move, right, in principle, because the metric is changing, the geometry of your boundary can change. And so there might be some instabilities there where your boundary starts crumpling up or some kind of instability that could arise in the boundary.
Yeah, that might be a thing that we need to look at in the future. But
no, but I mean, I think it's not there, because what I think it amounts to is putting some sheet source on the boundary, and then the characteristic side, at least, of the formulation is like, the characteristic simulations, there are many, and they never seen instabilities, because I mean, maybe the crap that you're generating gets thrown away to through infinity and never come back to really interact. So the consistency of the boundary data for a characteristic evolution just in and on itself was never 100% dealt with consistently, and you never saw an instability associated to that.
But I know for some of these characteristic formulations, they have been shown to be only weakly Herbach,
mm-hmm.
not strongly Herbach. Is that true of the one you're using, or it's?
Yes. At least from two recent papers, they claim that it's just, you know, weakly hyperbolic. So
have you tried to do one of these robustness tests, like Eric was saying, where you add noise at the grid scale?
Not yet, but maybe it's interesting to test that soon. I think this is also related to, you know, our, you know, next topic, you know, our current status and the future plans. Right now, we cannot do so many tests for this CCM system, because Spectre is still quite new, and there are a lot of things that are not ready in Spectre. So right now is the major limitation of our, you know, CCM system. But so our, and especially, you know, binary black hole systems are not ready right now. So we cannot run our current CCM system on the BBH systems. So what new Steffi suggested me to do is to construct a Spectre spec CCM, because spec is way more mature than Spectre, and we can run many BBH systems with spec. So we link a Spectre characteristic system as a library to spec executable, so we can run Spectre on the fly while spec BBH proceeds. It took me 2 months to work out all the difficulties, and right now this hybrid CCM system is about to be done. And once that is done, we have more ability to test whatever we want to test, maybe run that on many different systems, and also like adding the noise, all those stuff. So this is for our future plan. Other thing is that right now I have no intuition at all about the gauge side boundary condition. Can we use CCM for this part? And even conceptually, what will happen when we send gauge flux into the Cauchy domain? And how does it interact with the damped harmonic gauge? Right now I have no intuition at all. So this is another direction that could be explored in the future. And also the initial data I mentioned. So if we impose some bad initial data, that will lead to junk radiation, which will screw up the whole CCM simulation. So we have to build some better initial data for the characteristic system.
Question.
Yes.
Are there, guys, in a different context, not kind of address much of what would be needed here? Like the work, but maybe you're involved as well by Bitman and collaborators who try to do the memory, I think.
Yes.
But when they match to the in-spiraling kind of pre-regime, so you could imagine doing the same thing, right? That earlier on, you kind of read from a spiral PN or whatever.
Yes.
What the data should be on the first null hypersurface, would that not be what you want to do?
That is potential, but I mean, in order to, so even in that case, for the CCE, for current CCE simulation, we do see some junk radiation, but in principle, that is a way to do. You said like matching.
What are you using now for data?
Right now it's just a naive, motivated initial data. We assume boundary J follows as, one over R plus some higher correction. And right now we do have some better initial data, but for our current test, they are not necessary.
But I was thinking if you can get from the inspiral, let's say would be psi zero on that first hypersurface,
yep.
Then you can obtain what J, you use the word J, so I'm going to use it. J is a particular field that is the one that you need to specify there. So maybe that's an option.
Yes, but in order to do that, you have to have CCE first and do the hybridization, something like that. So maybe you have to chunk
some data. No, from the spiral. So if I know PN,
yep.
So I would have to reconstruct the PN metric.
Yep, yep.
I would read it out of there.
Yep.
So I don't have
I agree. Okay, yeah, I agree. In that way, yeah, that should be a way to construct initial data.
Cool.
All right, so other thing is that, this is motivated by our other recent work, the simulation of a black hole neutron star merger in scalar tensor theory. And potentially, we can also, we could add scalar field into a CCE system to extract memory from this Cauchy evolution, and this is in progress. I think right now this scalar plus metric CCE system has been well tested. Other interesting thing to explore is to match the scalar part, but that's a small direction. And finally, as I mentioned, CCM can lead to high, you know, high quality waveforms, and especially, you know, Psi-2 is crucial for us to fix BMS freedom with higher accuracy, at least in this case it's one order of magnitude better. And fixing BMS freedom is crucial for ring down analysis. So with CCM, we should, you know, expect more accurate waveforms for 3G detectors. You know, for current spec, accuracy is not enough for 3G. So maybe CCM is an important ingredient for future detectors. And also CCM might be important for long simulations. But apart from that, I still don't know if there are any other applications of CCM system, what we have right now. So yeah, I'm open to discussions. And I think that's pretty much it. Thanks, yeah.
Can you go to that plot? So that all three simulations show a bump or a significantly higher violation of the Bianchi identities at t equal 25.
No, not the reference one. It's good here.
It's good.
So
reference is low. I mean, they're all at 25. They're all high.
No.
It's good.
Oh, the reference is good.
Okay. Here is high because the
No, that's fine.
Okay.
I misspoke. Both CCD and CCM are doing something nasty at 25. What happened at 25? Is it
because the Tukhovsky hits the boundary?
Crosses the boundary.
Yes. And
but that's already showing that there is something missing in CCM.
Yes. So that points to the gauge part. Right now we don't have the gauge part, and for the gauge part we use just very naive boundary conditions. So I think.
But let me push against.
Yeah.
It's not just gauge, because if it were just gauge, it wouldn't be manifesting itself so plainly in something that is physical, which is Psi-2 at infinity. So this has to do with this feedback between these kind of, I think, overly optimistic separation of these three groups of things. I think what you're seeing is the gauge is significantly affecting number one. Because otherwise, why would it, something that is messing up the gauge is affecting a Bianchi identity at infinity? And it's affecting it at the level of the CCE, where you did nothing.
Give you one example, because right now for our current BBH simulation, if we run that for very long, like 10,000, something like that, we will see pretty large center of mass drift, and that part we are sure that part is due to the gauge part, because we measure the, you know, some gauge invariant stuff at square, and that part does not drift at all. So that may back react to the whole system. You know, in that case, the center of mass of the BBH drifts over time, and that can impact how we perform the Cauchy evolution.
Sure, but that's a much more complicated setup. This is a very clean setup.
Uh-huh.
And you have CCE and CCM performing the same.
Yep.
So that's saying that is something that is still strongly missing in the M, which I don't think is gauge. Because
maybe you disagree with the name of this part, but maybe we can go through the details afterwards. Yes, I agree. We are still missing this part. So for this part is very badly motivated, and this is the thing that we have to fix in the future.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
We should chat.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you do?
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Hi. Well, thanks for the talk. That was great. So you didn't say anything about the third test, and I was wondering, in terms of producing backscattering. So in the second test, you needed the self-gravity of the Tukhovsky wave to produce the backscattering. But if you have a curved background, then you have it for free. So did you see some? I would think that this situation would be very revealing in terms of showing the limitations of CCE versus CCM. So is that something that you saw?
So we did test that on the curve background, but one issue is that Spectre is still slow right now. We cannot run curve in an accurate way with Spectre. So I cannot answer that question yet.
Okay, would be nice to, see what happens there.
Yes, so that's the main reason that here I'm rushing into you know, constructing this Spectre spec CCM system so we can run way more interesting systems with CCM. But right now we cannot run CCM on many systems. And once that part is done, we can have, you know, more discussions.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do a convergence test?
What test?
Plot that you showed.
Uh-huh.
Just discussed. Did you do a convergence test there? If you change the resolution,
does
the Bianchi identity violation?
You mean the resolution of Cauchy set or CCs?
Either, both.
We didn't do that, but I think that's the thing we should do. I can back that too.
But is your expectation that it's due to some missing piece, like you said, or it's
I think resolution? I think there is some systematic thing in at least in the CCE case, and right now this is not a full CCM system, so there should be some systematic stuff that, you know, as a floor for that violation. But that's a good comment. We didn't think about that.
Would you expect to get the full exponential convergence with spectral order?
For CCE, we did do that test for some simple cases. We see a perfect, you know, exponential decay when we increase the angular resolution. You know, we have some simple physical systems like Tolkowski wave or anything. Yeah, we do see that.
Yeah, but would you expect to get that with CCM as well?
Yes. In principle, yes. But we didn't do the test.
Okay. What about matter?
What about matter? Matter. So,
if you wanted to do like a BNS merger or stuff, I don't know, some of this framework could be useful for extracting, other flows that are being thrown out of the outer boundary and stuff, and have simplified dynamics out there.
Yeah, for the moment, it cannot handle matter. So we have to, you know, put outer boundary at some distance so that there is no outflow or a significant outflow, you know, goes out the Cauchy problem and Cauchy domain.
Right, but you could kind of close your eyes and cheat a little bit. You left the matter being the Cauchy side, and then whatever goes to the characteristics you lost, you lose that matter. Fine.
Yeah.
No, I want that matter too.
Yeah, but it's delicate.
It's going to make kilonovels.
Yeah, but it's delicate to do that matter moving at the speed of light. It's like you have the opposite.
Yeah, it's going to be falling back too.
You're compactifying, but yeah. So
yeah.
Well, it's similar to this. The scalar tensor would scale away.
But the scatter is moving at the speed of light.
Yeah.
So you're gonna be moving at the speed of light trying to describe something that is very slow, then you're gonna have an issue.
Yeah. I don't scale as I want protons.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.